Spirit Radio Podcasts.
My next guest has been seeking to challenge the restrictions on the ban on public worship during the current restrictions, and his case has an update. So on the line to tell us a little bit about that, we have Galway-based businessman Declan Ghani. Declan, morning to you.
Good morning, Wendy.
So tell us a little bit about what happened this week then. There was some clarity given to the High Court from the state. What was that about?
Well, the clarity that was given to the High Court was in relation to a question that the judge had instructed our senior counsel to ask of the state, which was to have them confirm whether or not the ban was criminal, that it was a legal prohibition, or if it was just advisory. And the reason that question arose was that Professor Oren Doyle and some other eminent constitutional professors had raised this issue a number of weeks ago in a paper, saying that they believe, that in their opinion, that it is not lawful. It is not a law. Anyway, the state replied informally, as they were instructed by the court, and it was clarified yesterday that indeed it is a criminal offence to leave your home to attend a public mass, or for a priest to leave their place of residence to say a public mass. So it was indeed a law, a prohibition, and it's a penal law.
What, so in essence that means, Declan, if you drive to your local church down the road and a guard stops you and says, where are you going? If you say, I'm going for private prayer, right, you're grand. But if you say, I'm going to mass, what, they can give you a fine? What can happen?
Well, I suppose that could happen. They could fine you, but the degree to which that will be enforced is remains to be seen. In my opinion, and that's why I took this case in the first place, this is blatantly a violation of the Constitution, and hopefully when we get this case heard, that will be found to be the case. We also, yesterday, in this procedural hearing that was held this week, were allowed by the court, very kindly, and the state didn't object to this, to amend our statement of grounds to add the fact that the ban is a violation of Article 9 of the ECHR, which brings European law into it as well. And the reason that we wanted to do that was pretty pivotal to the successful overturn of the mass ban that was in Scotland. And when the Scots courts ruled about 3 weeks ago now on that, the Article 9 of the ECHR was something that played an important part in that. So we've added that in addition to our Irish constitutional claims. Very gladly, we were also allowed to add a witness statement from an Irish bishop. The court also allowed that as well, which was and the state did not object to that either. So the judge then has put this up for mention again on the 27th of April, which it was in order to give the state time to respond in its defensive papers and preparations, etc., and to give us time to make those amendments. So it's back up for mention on the 27th of April.
27th of April, Declan, has obviously been going on for a number of months, and I know in the Scottish situation, where of course their courts deemed that it was unconstitutional to ban public worship, but I think their ban was lifted effectively a few days before it was going to happen anyway, with lockdown restrictions being eased. Do you think that's part of the state of play here, just trying to kick the can down the road in the hope that, hopefully restrictions will be eased in May and this issue might go away? Do you think the government might be playing that card?
I don't know what the government are doing. I mean, why this ban is in place in the first place I believe it to be blatantly unconstitutional, so it shouldn't be there in the first place. The minister is on record in the Dáil saying that it wasn't a criminal offence.
That was Stephen Donnelly, the Minister for Health.
Yes, and now we have the state confirming that indeed it is. In terms of the time that it takes, the Irish court system is pretty pretty well known that they are under-resourced, and it does take a lot of time to get cases through the Irish court system, and that's a bigger problem. I have to assume that this is you know, more
it's,
of the same.
Yeah, where it's part of the process. So what do you expect to happen, Declan, then on the 27th?
Well, that's really up to the court, and I will respect obviously whatever they say. But we are hoping to get a date soonest for the case to be heard. And what has already been agreed is that there will be what's called a telescoped hearing, which is that they will hear both the question of our right to bring the case, so our standing, etc., and ability to bring the case, plus the case itself in the one hearing, which is that's efficient. When it happens, that will be efficient, and hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. I mean, obviously, you know, we're banned from the mass. The penal law is in place now and, you know, prohibits us by law from attending mass, public mass, at least attending it lawfully. And every day that remains in place, we're being prohibited from exercising our constitutional rights. So the sooner that it's sorted, the better.
And finally, just to ask you, Declan, in other countries where they have allowed public worship, do we have any data or information to say how safe or not safe it is in relation to the virus?
That's a great question. We do. Indeed, as I've been speaking to experts and getting expert witnesses, engaging with expert witnesses, one of the interesting things that came out of this was to find that there's a report in the US that after the bans were relaxed there, there was a million, statistically looked at, a million Catholic masses that were held, and the number of incidences of COVID spread that they could trace to those. Now, these were masses that were held that were following carefully the COVID mitigation rules, and the number of spread incidences from those was zero, even though they have confirmed that there were, you know, multiple cases of people who were asymptomatic but already had COVID, what they were carrying it, but they, because they were socially distanced, because they were wearing masks, because of sanitization, because of one-way pedestrian traffic management and reduced numbers in the churches, it wasn't spread. So one of the things, and that I would say, you know, to everybody is, you know, God willing, when we have success one way or the other, and success is being allowed to go back to a public to attend public mass, the diocese in Ireland have put in very careful and strict COVID mitigation rules about mask wearing, about using sanitizers, about how we traffic through the churches. They've trained stewards in how to reduce risk. You know, as long as we follow those, the risk is very, very small. And we now know that by looking at what's happened in the US and elsewhere. And the Constitution is on our side. So as once we are allowed back, as long as we act responsibly, caring for the common good and each other, which we will, I think that we should be very safely able to attend at Mass once again.
Declan, thank you so much for joining us on the programme today. That's businessman Declan Ganley giving us the update on the case that he has taken, challenging that the ban on public worship is unconstitutional. Spirit. If you've been pregnant before, or you're pregnant at the moment like me, you'll know you can get stressed. It's an anxious time at the best of times, but then now we've got a pandemic heaped on top of it, and that can make it all the more difficult, from practical things like having to go to a scan by yourself just to losing a lot of your in-person support network. Well, on the line to help us with managing anxiety during pregnancy, especially at this time, I have Niamh Cassidy, who's from mybabybeginnings.ie. Niamh, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Wendy, and congratulations.
Thanks a million. So first of all, pregnancy in general, would you say the mums that you deal with, is it generally a stressful or anxious time, or is it just some of us are more anxious than others?
Pregnancy in itself can be an anxious time. Anything that's new, that's unknown, that's different, you know, can bring some sort of level of anxiety for anyone. And if someone is already an anxious person, obviously that can increase. But as you said in the introduction, when we throw in a global pandemic on top of that, then anxiety levels do seem to be increasing across the board.
And what are you finding at the moment? Because obviously there's been, lots of people might be aware of, there's been a big campaign across the country where women are sharing their stories of just how difficult it has been kind of going it alone in maternity hospitals. How do you manage all that side of things when you feel a little bit helpless in that situation?
Absolutely, and it's very difficult for women attending the hospitals at the moment, especially when they see in the UK and in other jurisdictions where those level of restrictions aren't in place. So being without your partner attending an antenatal appointment or in early labour or an induction, or if someone has to have a stay in hospital, is obviously very difficult. So women are really struggling with that. And as you mentioned, there's been big campaigns where they've been explaining those struggles. So there are a few things that people can do to just help some of that. So one would be being prepared going into an appointment. So having an idea of what questions you want to ask, having that talked out with your partner, writing them down so you have them. And if you're not clear on something that's been explained to you, ask them maybe, can you take your partner on the phone or take some notes? And understanding as well that in the most cases, even later on in pregnancy, you don't need to make decisions necessarily straight away. So you can say if something's been offered to you, maybe around a induction or whatever it might be, but you're feeling anxious about making that decision without your partner's support, to say, you know, well, actually, I'm not really ready to make this decision right now. I want to go home and speak to my partner, or I want to go out and talk to him on the phone and come back to you. And just allowing yourself that bit of time and not feeling pushed into making decisions that you're not ready to make.
Do we know, Niamh, and I know it's probably different in each maternity hospital, but I think that it's one of the things that's stressful for women, is that there's different restrictions and protocols for when you actually do go into labour. What? How different is it now to what it was like before the pandemic?
Oh, the maternity hospitals in Ireland have always had different policies. So we don't have, there are some national policies, how the maternity hospitals operate is independent to each hospital. So in that sense, that's not completely different. But with the pandemic restrictions, again, each hospital has been able to make their own decisions. So there might be one mother attending University Hospital Cork and another in the Rotunda, and they're having very different experiences, and they're talking online as well, so they can see that they're having different experiences, and that can actually increase anxiety. Well, why are they able to do that and I can't have it? And it can just cause a little bit more anxiety again.
So what would you say to a woman who's listening who is in that situation and they feel just that anxiety is getting on top of them? They want to manage it. They'll take your advice in terms of when they're in at their next appointment. Is don't be put under pressure. You don't need to make decisions straight away. But what about just the kind of day-to-day, especially where those, you know, as you mentioned there, women either chatting online or WhatsApp groups or whatever the case may be, but where you don't have even things like going to antenatal classes in the hospital. I always remember that was great, like meeting with their mums who are in the same boat. Those things are all virtual at the moment. So how do we kind of make sure that we connect into those support networks properly?
Yeah. So I would absolutely say to attend a live virtual antenatal class if you can. So whether that's through your hospital or through a private provider, because when they're live, you get to ask all the questions that you need to ask, and you can just feel a little bit more reassured in being able to ask those questions. So looking for a class that has a small group where there is chat, where you can ask lots of questions, can really help. And also just that education piece can help reduce anxiety. So having an idea about how the hospital works, what kind of procedures might be in place that you might be able to choose from or not, and just having a little bit of knowledge before going in can help take away some of the fear. Also, there are different techniques that you can use at any time, so in pregnancy or in labour or in parenting or any time around just trying to stop our thought processes. So what often happens is when anxiety rises, our mind kind of runs away with us. So we think of one thing, and then all of a sudden we're 10 miles down the road, there's volcanoes exploding, and everything is just a disaster in our brain. So being able to stop that train of thought, that runaway train, and just being able to take some exercises. So what I would do with a lot of my clients is some mindfulness practice. So trying to stay in the present, focus on the breath, focus on the feelings in their body, whether it's the feet firm on the floor, and just anything that can kind of bring you back to the present moment and stop that catastrophizing of thoughts can really help just calm things down and keep the blood pressure normal and just kind of stop things from getting carried away.
I think many people can identify with that, Niamh. Yeah, just trying to ground yourself in that moment to stop the snowball effect. But it's understandable though that sometimes that snowball can happen when you see a headline. For example, that story of there was another kind of update just in relation to the possible link between it's called, I think, COVID placentitis and stillbirth. Even though it's such a small number, it's still hard not to be affected by stories like that. What's your advice to mums who are worried about those types of things?
Absolutely, and it's completely normal to have a fear reaction to that. I suppose what we need to remember is that it is small cases, that it's not fully understood yet, that most pregnant women are doing their absolute utmost to keep themselves safe anyway, so just maintaining those all the guidelines around keeping safe from COVID in general. And feeling okay about going to your maternity hospital or contacting your maternity hospital or your midwife or whoever may be doing your care. If you have any concerns, don't feel, you know, oh, I'm bothering them or, oh, this is silly or, you know, anything like that. Get in touch. You know, if there's no point in being afraid in pregnancy. So if something is bothering you, get in touch, insist on being seen and just make sure that you can feel comfortable that everything is checked out and that everything is okay.
One of the things you mentioned earlier, Niamh, was just kind of asking questions and making a plan. And that's probably one of the things that's difficult. You know, sometimes you're told, make a birth plan. And it might look, in the best of times, things mightn't go according to plan, depending on what happens when you go into labour. But what about things like that, like putting in place breastfeeding support or doing, you know, specific types of antenatal education? What would you recommend there?
So in the antenatal education, instead, if you can get to a small group live online, that can really help because you can get all your questions answered. You can also start looking through those birth preferences or birth plans and looking at, you know, if things change, what are the deviations of birth, and then what would I want in that scenario, or how would I feel, you know, if I do need a cesarean section, what kind of a cesarean section would I like? What kind of, do I want music played? You know, there are options within each different type of birth. Also, as you mentioned around the breastfeeding support, putting in a postnatal support plan for yourself is really important as well. So being able to think about, well, after my baby is born, what help do I need and how am I going to get it? This is especially difficult during the pandemic because people don't have as much access to their families, as much access to professionals, and they may feel uncomfortable, you know, am I allowed to have my family visit? Who can give me support and all of that? So kind of having those conversations with each other and with your family and deciding what level of support you're going to take when the baby's born and what professional support that you may be able to engage if necessary, whether that's through the public health nurse, GPs or private support persons, just as postnatal doulas or lactation consultants.
I think that's a really good point. There's obviously managing the anxiety now, but then thinking of when the baby comes, what you need in place. Niamh, thanks so much for your advice today. That's Niamh Cassidy of My Baby Beginnings. And if you want to get in touch with Niamh, you can head onto her website, which is mybabybeginnings.ie. And she does lots of different types of antenatal classes. And she's also a lactation consultant, so she can give a breastfeeding advice as well. And there's lots of great tips on her website. Spirit. Are you considering selling your home, or maybe you're a first-time buyer and you're wondering, what should I do? Should I hang on? Should I buy now? Well, one of the things that has been a weird anomaly of this pandemic is that the property prices have gone up, where people might have thought that they've gone down. And on the line, just to talk to us a little bit about how it's all been going in the property market and advice on if you're doing a virtual house viewing, we have Claire Connolly of Claire Connolly Estate Agents. Claire, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, and thanks so much, Wendy, and thank you for having me on.
So what has the housing market been like during this pandemic the last year, Claire?
Oh, Lord, Wendy, where to start? Well, I can tell you, I mean, I had a 20-year career in pharmaceutical. I didn't think I'd actually have another career now where I experienced something like this. It's just been, oh boy, we've had to literally, a whirlwind, literally adapt overnight, Wendy, bring all our business online, virtual viewings, absolutely everything. Excuse me, in actual fact, estate agents were one of the first to bring them online. But it's been very challenging, but we've all adapted very well, I have to say. Just to bring you back to the early stages, 2020, you know, March 2020, we went into lockdown. It was very, property prices were definitely struggling, I would say. You had people losing their jobs, God love them, you know, they were laid off. reduced hours. They were on the PUP, and of course, when you were on the PUP, banks would not lend. Understandably, so all the so many mortgage approvals fell through, sales fell through, and what I was finding, Wendy, back then, in the early days of the pandemic, was that I was negotiating prices between the buyer and the seller, because there was so much on the market then that we were. I was able to, and I was actually giving a reduction of between 5 and 7%. But then as the year progressed, let's say from we came out in June, finally came out, and then the next few months before we went into October, it was actually predicted that property prices would fall by 12%, but the exact opposite happened, as you just said there. They went up by 6%. By the end of the year. And I don't have to tell you, hear it nearly every day in so many news reports that that was primarily driven, of course, by the shortage of supply. And obviously, and the
yeah, it's a supply and demand situation because the construction was put on hold, so it's pushing prices
exactly
up. So what does that mean then, Claire, for example, for, you know, someone who is either buying or selling? Do they crack on? Do they put things on hold?
I know. I would say absolutely not, Wendy. Now, if you're thinking of presenting your property to the market, absolutely not. And this, because there is so much that we can do. It's just, sellers may be a little bit nervous in that, oh, gosh, look, estate agents can't do physical viewings. Should we wait? But there's so much that buyers now can see through the virtual tours, and they're becoming more elaborate all the time, that I would suggest if they're ready to go and it is a perfect time to present this time of the year in particular, it's a perfect time to present your property to the market. And even if prices are going up, if you really do, if you want to get your home, if you have to sell, or if you really want to get your dream home and you have the funds, and remember, after the last 16 months, people now have a lot of cash in their back pocket. They have their deposit ready. If you're ready to go, I would say go for it. Look, if it's your, as you say, your dream home, your forever home, your even your next 10 years, go for it now if you're ready to go. But if I would advise, just for example, if you're a very high-end investor, they're not really going to worry what the market is doing. But if you're, say, a first-time investor coming in, I would say, in this case, I would say, look, maybe hold off, just hold off until, say, maybe early, the middle of 22, because we don't know, Wendy, what's going to happen just yet, obviously. I mean, we have three tiers, as you know, in the economy at the moment, the population. We have those who are not affected, thank God, and they're doing really well. They're able to save. Then you have another cohort where they're, God bless, they're all in the PUP. And then you've got the industries have been totally decimated. My God, the hospitality, the restaurants. So we just don't know what the fallout from that is going to be yet, you know, and when the government cushion is taken away. Like, we'll be fortunate that it's the lowest borrowing. We've been very fortunate we didn't have to borrow at such a low rate. And that's really, really kept us going. But when all that is really pulled out, we just see exactly what's going to happen, like, you know, when, you know, what our unemployment level is going to be like, you know.
Yeah, it's really hard to predict yet. I've been
really
surprised,
is.
Certainly. One family member in our household who sold a house that went so quickly, I couldn't believe it.
Yes.
House around the corner, you know, houses seem to be selling. But a lot of it's working, Claire, now with these virtual viewings. How does that work?
Yeah.
And what's your advice to someone who's going, okay, I'm going to log on and virtually view this house. It's not the same as being there. This is the biggest purchase of my life. And what's your advice as to how to navigate that in the best way?
Yes, and I know it. And as you say, it is the biggest part of their lives. So I would just say, Wendy, make sure you can watch the viewing as many times as you like, and jot down any key features, like maybe the flooring. It could be any small little things. You know, can you see Wi-Fi connections as you're going through the rooms? You know, even little things like that. Just jot them all down, or key points that you know that you want to get from that property. And then I would show it to your friends, show it to your family, just to look, what do you think of this? And then I'd also, without a doubt, check it out on Google Maps. Gives you an idea of the size, the orientation. The orientation is very important. You know, it's lovely if you can have your south or your west orientation. And also, it'll give you an idea of the neighbouring properties and what, for example, is there anything there? Can, you know, there's a sort of a black area at the back of that in Google Maps. What exactly is that? So, and your estate agent, you know, your estate agent should know all this. And it's our job to know absolutely the property inside out. So don't be afraid to ask the agent, you know, how long has it been on the market? What's the BO rating? Like, any issues like, any leak, damp, does the boiler need to be replaced, property rewired? And also, I would say, be very careful, Wendy, as well, for apartment sales, because, you know, pre-Celtic Tiger, a lot of them, as we know, they are manifesting a lot of issues now in that fire safety issues, pyrite. Don't be afraid to ask. And actually as well, like, let's say roof might need to be replaced. What is the compensation fund like? What are the service charges like? If the service charges are huge, well, then you know there's going to be, you know, you're going to have a very hefty service charge fee. So don't be afraid to ask the agent. But also I would make sure that you go around, try and do a drive-by. Again, there's nothing, you know, nothing better than that, because you see...
Yeah, check out the area, walk around, see what's around there.
Exactly.
It's different pre-pandemic. I remember when we moved house, my father-in-law even knocking on the neighbours' doors, but you can't do that anymore, but at least you can get a sense of the area. What about, are people able to, at the moment, under the current restrictions, Claire, make a private appointment? Like, let's say you do your virtual viewing online, then can you go and see the property kind of one-on-one with someone like you?
Well, technically, Wendy, we're not allowed under the current restrictions, and we actually thought that we would be back on the 12th, similar to the construction industry, but it looks like it'll be officially the 4th of May when we are back, all going well. But no, it's not that easy. As I say, we're not allowed to technically, but when a property, the legislation states that we can, when we're sale agreed, when a property is sale agreed at that stage, then we can bring in, and you know, this whole...
So that means someone does a virtual viewing and essentially they have to put their bid in, and well, then, yes, I know,
yes,
when you're sale agreed.
That's technically what they should do, Wendy, and then show full mortgage approval. It's only motivated buyers. This is what's really, I suppose, the virtual tours, they've really, it's like... weed it out. As an estate agent, makes it a lot easier for us, because we know that they're motivated buyers. They have their full mortgage approval. They're ready to go. So we can really, really work with them on so many levels. So I would say, yes, I would say, sorry, I've just lost my train of thought there.
Just you were just talking about, in terms of, you do the virtual viewing, you decide, okay, I like the look of it, we really want to move, you put your bid in, and at that point when it goes sale agreed, then you can see the property. That is a difficult thing. I can't imagine it, you know, having to put, but people are doing it, aren't they, Claire?
Well, you know, they shouldn't be, Wendy, but there may be one or two agents out there that are doing that, but we really shouldn't be doing it until we're given the go-ahead from the government, that, you know, after the 4th of May, that we can do this. And I know for a very high-end property, it's virtually impossible to do that. But, you know, we really should wait until then, until we actually can open up safely, and then bring, you know, restricted, still obviously keeping our 2 metre distances, like sanitising, etc. But we should really wait till then.
Yeah.
I know it's not easy. I do
Claire,
take your
just
point.
Finally to ask you, because we've talked about those who might be looking to buy a house and the virtual viewings and all that, but what about someone who's thinking of selling? And again, that's obviously still happening to a certain extent, but is it much more kind of complicated with all we've been talking about, and even paperwork, and is it a more arduous process at this time?
No, it's not actually. No, I mean, everything is done online now. Obviously, you have all your e-signing, etc., online. But it's not any different, Wendy, really, from that point of view. From, you know, if honestly, I'd be delighted to give anybody any advice that they wanted around the selling area now that we're in COVID. I would be absolutely delighted. But it's not that radically different from when we actually did start off from the selling point of view. If you're talking about the documentation, etc., it's not that different, no. But if people are looking for advice, I'd be delighted to help them.
Well, thanks for joining us on the programme today. That's Claire Connolly from Claire Connolly Estate Agents. And if you want to get in touch with Claire, you can go to her website, which is clareconnolly.ie.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.